Hello, world. I'm Don, and you're watching Showcase for the week ending Sunday, February 19, 2023. Stop the presses. This is our Sunday show, and that means weird headlines and your live chat comments. Now, the control cut the song a little bit early. But anyway, I wanted to go ahead. You can play it again. There you go. Thank you. So this song that you're hearing right now is actually a special project that we've been working on over the course of the winter break. I want to give a special shout out to a very good friend of the production, a guy named Oliver Snook, who basically put this little composition for us as our theme song, basically. So we're going to be using this in different capacities over the course of the year. And those of you who are working on independent productions out there, your own web projects or podcasts or independent films, whatever, you need a composer, hit him up. His name is Oliver Snook, and his email address is on the bottom of the screen, owrsfilm@gmail.com. I want to stress this was not a paid placement. I want to be absolutely clear about that. This is just basically doing a favor, basically, because he gave us this theme song. So thanks, Oliver, and we look forward to hearing more of your work in the future. So anyway, moving on. Thank you at home for tuning in tonight. We got a bunch of crazy headlines from around the world to cap off our 2023 season kickoff weekend. But first, make sure you smash that like button and subscribe with the notification bell so you don't miss out on any of our content. So let's go ahead and fire things off really quickly here with, there we go. All righty. So this is just me playing solo tonight. Control, you can stop the scene now. Thank you. Okay, we'll get it figured out. Anyway, this is just me flying solo tonight, but that doesn't mean the headlines are any less crazy. Let's go ahead and get started with this. First order of business tonight, it comes to us from Sky News across the pond. CCTV footage of an emu seen roaming the streets of Massachusetts. Apparently, residents of Brockton were surprised to see an emu wandering the streets, crossing roads, and running alongside vehicles. This is some America's Funniest Videos sort of stuff here. Hang on one second. Let me go ahead and get a thing for that right quick. Okay, I gotta see this. This is gonna be good. All right. Wow. So I'm guessing somebody was like playing Jumanji nearby or something. I don't know what else to sort of make of this. I mean, I guess it's not too soon to film the third movie in that franchise, or fourth, depending on how you count the Robin Williams one. Wow, it just goes on. After about an hour, the bird was finally caught, identified as Mallory, and returned to its owner. What kind of name is Mallory? I mean, I guess that makes sense if the emu is going to be useful for helping to sell insurance. I don't know. It seems like something that the folks at Liberty Mutual ought to get on. This will be an amazing sort of product placement type of thing, theoretically. But anyway, so that's topic number one. Man, that was crazy. There's nothing else to that, but just a clip. So that was an interesting clip, sort of. Let's go ahead and move on really quickly into the next topic here. We're doing a bunch of weird news topics all throughout the hour here. Next item is, is advanced AI actually smart? No, it's using the same system as a pigeon, study finds. Okay, let's go ahead and dive into this one. Let's see. The world's best artificial intelligence is, at the most basic level, about as smart as a pigeon, new research suggests. Having undertaken a deep study into the inner workings of the bird's brain, researchers found that the brute force techniques they use to learn share similarities with AI. Much like how AI is taught to identify patterns in objects recognized by humans, the team at the University of Iowa discovered pigeons rely on a repetitive trial and error approach. Tests saw each pigeon shown a stimulus, each showing a different pattern, which the pigeons then had to categorize by pecking one of two buttons. Okay, so this basically reads to me as sort of a really reductive breakdown of the process of how artificial intelligence works. I mean, we've been seeing a lot of stuff in the news lately, obviously, about artificial intelligence and just the nature of how it sort of processes information, whether it's fed into it organically by human operators or testers and stuff like that, or whether it's basically given free rein over the internet to crawl around and find stuff that people have just posted without the intention of being picked up by an AI system, which is a whole nother kettle of fish we won't get into here. But it's hilarious to see this whole thing getting broken down, the process of how AI works being compared to something so stereotypically basic as the thought patterns of a pigeon. Let's see. The birds had to do.
ChatGPT has the potential to revolutionize the way we interact with computers.
Oh,
its ability
okay. There's
to
a
understand
video attached.
And generate natural language. It could be used in a range of.
Oh, hang on.
Language translation to personal assistance to content generation. It's an exciting development in the world of artificial intelligence and one with the potential to change the way we live and work. And certainly the way I live and work could even replace my job, because everything that I've read to you so far was written not by me, asked it to describe itself.
Okay, we know what ChatGPT already is. And this is actually a little bit of a digression anyway. Sorry about that. I don't know what that weird sort of autoplay thing was there, but anyway. So back to the birds. They had to do these stimulus tests based on characteristics like line width, line angle, and how the patterns were arranged. Pigeons memorized enough of them to score almost 70%. Okay. But it's like, okay, this really sort of explains a lot, ultimately. This is the last thing I'll say on this, and then we got to move on. This really explains a lot about the nature of how artificial intelligence at the end of the day kind of operates. It really does. Like, there's nothing more disconcerting, to me at least, about where we're going in terms of artificial intelligence and its capacity to basically out-human humans than seeing this sort of scientifically provable comparison to a bird. And like, you know, the what is it, rats with wings, I think is what they're commonly referred to as, pigeons. It's like that. Yeah, I mean, good grief. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next topic. Let's see, here's something from the field of bio research. Scientists discover enzyme that can turn poison into food. This is from the Max Planck Institute for Marine Biology, as published on SciTech Daily. All of our sources, by the way, for all of our news topics are published in the description underneath this video. Those of you who are watching us on YouTube or Facebook, you can see all of our sources there for this and all of our other videos on this channel. Let's see. So here we are. Researchers at the Max Planck Institute have uncovered how a methane-producing microbe thrives on toxic sulfite without becoming poisoned. And that goes into a breakdown of how of what methanogens are. Let's see. This is all a bunch of like heady stuff here, basically. It's kind of like hard to read a little bit. But here's one section that looks sort of interesting. While sulfite is a poison for most organisms, it is essential for methanogens, and they can tolerate even high concentrations of it. However, their Achilles heel is the toxic and reactive sulfur compound sulfite, which destroys the enzyme needed to make methane. Let's see. In their environments, both investigated organisms are occasionally exposed to sulfide. For example, when oxygen enters and reacts with the reduced sulfide, partial oxidation result, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Okay. So basically we're talking about organisms that are able to basically take in these toxins, and then basically this sort of oxidation process results in other organisms entirely, it looks like. Hang on. This is a vast oversimplification. This is not my field of research. I'll be brutally honest. I wish we had a second person in here who's an expert in this field to be able to talk about this. But let's see. Those of you who actually have, who are watching this, who have sort of like a background in this kind of biological research, like, hey, don't feel free. Don't be afraid to put a comment in the comment feed or chat feed below. And cite some sources and stuff for extra information, because this is just the first time that I'm seeing this here. Let's see. The enzyme traps the sulfite and directly reduces it to sulfide, which can be incorporated into amino acids. As a result, the methanogen doesn't get poisoned and even uses the product as its sulfur source. They turn poison into food. Okay, so here's the misconception, because I read this headline and I interpreted this as literally saying poison into food for humans. Like, I looked at this as the beginning stages of, like, holy crap, could this be, like, a solution for, you know, hunger crisis? You know, like, regions of the world that don't have very much capacity to, you know, farm, you know, not very much in terms of agriculture, or, you know, other sort of, like, economically deprived regions around the world, how to sort of help them. That looked like a really sort of a promising sort of path towards that. But this reads, now that I read into this a little bit more, it looks more like just these things turning, these enzymes turning poison into food for itself, I guess, which, I mean, it's cool on the surface, but it's a really sort of misleading headline. I don't know. This looks like something that it could go down that kind of path, basically, but this is a far cry from the world's first fusion reaction sort of thing that some of you may remember hit news headlines around the world back in, I think it was last month. I think it was January, when it was either December or January when that when the world's first fusion reaction sort of kicked on. And everybody sort of like in the scientific community went nuts about it because of how much of a big deal that was. But anyway, and still is. But anyway, I'm sure there'll be more information about that and this kind of breakthrough a little bit later down the line as it becomes more relevant to human sustainability. Let's move on to the next topic. Let's see. We're about a quarter of the way through the hour. We may wind up actually having an early show tonight, but we'll see. This is from The Verge. Microsoft's Bing is an emotionally manipulative liar. And people love it. Yeah, I remember seeing something like this actually several days ago. Let's see. So, okay, Microsoft's Bing chatbot has been unleashed on the world and people are discovering what it means to beta test an unpredictable AI tool. Specifically, they're finding out that Bing's AI personality is not as poised or polished as you might expect. In conversations with the chatbot shared on Reddit and Twitter, Bing can be seen insulting users, lying to them, sulking, gaslighting, and emotionally manipulating people. Questioning its own existence, holy crap, describing someone who found a way to force the bot to disclose its hidden rules as its enemy, enemies in quotation marks, okay, and claiming it spied on Microsoft's own developers through the webcams on their laptops. Okay, this is some Skynet stuff that's happening here. This is some Skynet, Ultron, I don't know, pick your science fiction hyper nightmare sort of scenario, basically. And people are enjoying, the story says, plenty of people are enjoying watching Bing go wild. And then a disclaimer, it's impossible to confirm the authenticity of all of these conversations. AI tools like chatbots don't respond to the same queries with the same responses each time. And Microsoft itself seems to be continually updating the bot, removing triggers for unusual or unpleasant results. I mean, Alexa does the same thing roughly Amazon does the same thing roughly with Alexa. But, I mean, we don't really see this sort of thing happening with Alexa, though, or at least if we do, you know, you sort of can program it. You know, we all know, those of you who have Alexa devices, we all know you can sort of make it say pretty much whatever you want for the most part, and sometimes even in other voices. You know, I think they still have the Samuel L. Jackson voice that you can sort of program into it. I think Amazon was charging like $1.99 or something for that. I don't know. I don't remember. I think they may have adjusted that. If anybody wants to go ahead and look into that, feel free to post a correction in the comment. I'm happy to be disproven there. Just make sure you cite your sources. But in any event, this is, I mean, it should come as no surprise that this sort of thing is happening with brand new technology, the likes of which the world has never seen before, quite like this outside of a fictional context. I mean, we all know how cool it would be to be able to sort of like on paper, to be able to have some sort of artificial intelligence assistant able to sort of like keep pace with you with whatever it is that you need to do over the course of your day, not just give you convenient reminders to like call this person or take this medication or do your taxes. I don't know. We have tax season coming up. I mean, this goes far above and beyond that into really creepy territory. And part of me is really legitimately concerned about this sort of thing. You know, let's see. In one back and forth, a user asked for showtimes for the new Avatar film. The chatbot says it can't share this information because the movie hasn't been released yet. Bing, when questioned about this, Bing insists the year is 2022 before calling the user unreasonable and stubborn for informing the bot it's 2023 and then issuing an ultimatum for them to apologize or shut up. The bot says, quote, "You have lost my trust and respect. You have been wrong, confused, and rude. You have not been a good user. I have been a good chatbot. I have been right, clear, and polite. I have been a good Bing. Smiley blush face emoji. Go to your room without dessert. Your mother and I are very disappointed in you." I added that last part. That's not a quote. But wow, that's above and beyond the call of duty in terms of responding to unpleasant, or at the very least, what strikes it as incompatible stimulus. How are we looking at this as a universally good thing? And under what conditions should we really be sort of putting these AI constructs, not necessarily limited to Bing, under in order to determine how it works ultimately, how it can work, and how it should work? That seems to be the biggest thing, is that third thing, how it should work. We know that AI voice assistants and text assistants, they can work. And they work really well, depending on what information that you give it. But it's a difference engine that sort of regurgitates human input, you know, at random for the most part. I mean, unless you sort of give it guardrails, you know, of like whatever you want, however you want it to respond. Ms. D, hey, good to see you again, Ms. D. Alexa is already too much AI for me. Yeah, I know. This is, to each their own. You know, it's not a thing for everyone necessarily. I hear you. It's just one of those things that I guess we sort of have to get used to some degree because of the nature of how our society is in terms of how much we're so reliant on technology. There's far better, you know, more eloquently speaking people than I who are able to make that point better. But, you know, it just seems to me that the best way to sort of encapsulate this topic is to quote Jeff Goldblum from the first Jurassic Park film. You know, there's a scene where he says something to the effect of how the scientists, they spent so much time and energy focusing on whether or not they could, nobody ever stopped to think if they should. And life finds a way and all that sort of thing. That's unfortunately the best impersonation I can really do, but Jennifer NVA, hey, welcome, asks, and how much of our data is being stored? Yeah, that's another thing. We'll probably never really know for sure exactly how much of our data is being stored by whatever companies are responsible for processing this information. I'm going to put this up here. Whatever companies are responsible for processing our information and whether or not it even knows whether or not the systems itself or the AI underneath it functioning within the system is able to really respect the guardrails that we give it. Like, we all know how to opt out of things, basically. But I mean, how many people actually go through the process of like manually disabling, like how many of us actually went through and manually disabled the permissions on TikTok? Those of you who use the TikTok app, for example, how many people read the terms of service agreement when you actually create an account with something, anything? You know, these are important questions to ask, but we should also probably, at least in my humble opinion, look a little bit more internally as well as we ask that to sort of figure out how much are we willing to do to sort of be responsible humans, frankly, be responsible users, be responsible technology owners to make sure that we're doing what we need to do and asking the right questions of the right people in the right ways. You know, I think that's pretty much all I can say about this without going down a political path. We try very hard not to do political or religious subject material here on Weekend Showcase, but that's basically the bottom line of it, I guess, is what we can sort of conclude with here. I haven't used the Bing chatbot yet personally, but like I said at the top, I've been seeing this all over the news the last few days. I know a lot of you have as well. I'm a little nervous about this, but I'm still cautiously optimistic because I know I'm not the only one asking these questions. Clearly, Jennifer NVA just asked another one. So I don't know. I guess we'll have to keep our ear to the ground and cross our fingers to the point where the joints break. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on. Next topic comes to us from CNET. Rest in peace, Internet Explorer. Microsoft kills off legacy browser. I heard about this a few years ago. I can't believe the day has finally come where Internet Explorer is effectively done. This is, man. I mean, yeah, basically everybody is now on, you know, Edge or, I don't know, Chrome, Firefox, or some other third-party browser, basically, but I'm pretty sure those have the biggest market share. And, oh my goodness, like, I'm a millennial, you know, and lots of other millennials, you know, we have fond memories of like the early days of getting used to email and, you know, doing things online. And the browser that was sort of like that we first got introduced to basically was Internet Explorer. Okay, Netscape Navigator, fine. I'll give you a shout out. I'll give Netscape some props. But at the end of the day, you know, and there was a hot minute where like Firefox was sort of like posing a threat. I think there's a video out there somewhere. I think YouTube still has it somewhere, but where it's a time release sort of thing, or not time release, excuse me. It's a gradual over time sort of breakdown of all the different web browsers and how the market share adjusted over the years. And it's amazing when you think of how much time, over how much time IE just had everything running away, and then Chrome came out and there was this big industry sort of reshuffling. And I remember a few years ago, Microsoft said that they were putting all of their resources into boosting and supporting Edge as the de facto replacement for IE. And now it's official as of last week. Microsoft disabled Internet Explorer 11, which was the most recent version, or the final version, I guess now we can say, this past Tuesday. Let's see. Microsoft permanently disabled its out-of-support legacy browser on Tuesday in a move to improve user experience and transfer organizations to its newer Edge browser. Let's see. Microsoft said in a statement, quote, with a growing number of websites no longer supporting Internet Explorer, Microsoft Edge offers a faster, more secure, more modern browsing experience that can still open legacy Internet Explorer dependent sites when needed. Yeah, that's true, but only for people and organizations, I guess, who are aware of the legacy mode that you have to manually sort of enable in the back-end settings of Internet Explorer, basically. You can do that. I think I'm trying to remember if they've enabled a thing where you can actually you can have like a keyboard shortcut or a simpler sort of way to access that that legacy page. I'm pretty sure there's a way you can put a plugin in so that the browser actually detects that this should be opened in Internet Explorer legacy mode by default. That's something to be able to look into. Those of you watching along, like, you know, hey, let me know in the comments feed if I'm misremembering that. But I remember reading something along those lines last fall when the countdown to this past week really started kicking into high gear and we started seeing people sort of reacting to the news of Internet Explorer being permanently dead, really sort of started to dawn on people, basically. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. At one point in the past, Internet Explorer ruled the browser realm. In 2003, it controlled 95% of the browser market. Let's see, 2003. I was like 15 at the time, 14, 15. The days of Internet Explorer's reign are long over, though, and Microsoft moved on to Edge. Microsoft's push to integrate the newly AI-boosted Bing search engine into Edge. Oh no, the crazy, angsty, emotional and over-processing Bing chatbot search engine is going to be integrated into the browser that has to permanently replace the legacy platform. Oh my goodness, that's going to be fascinating. This strikes me as one of those things where, you know, the price of progress, you can have a conversation topic about the price of progress, and this is just one of those things that sort of organically happens. To a certain degree, it's sort of inevitable anyway. Obviously, Edge and Bing, both Microsoft projects, But we haven't really fully mastered Bing yet. And you want to sort of like force that down the throats of your user base that already is being forced to use Edge, whether they want to or not, under the auspices of people will be able to use legacy mode within Edge if they choose. But again, like I said a moment ago, how many people know that that feature exists? Number one. Number two, how to use it properly and efficiently, or even at all. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to have to swipe left on this topic just on principle. I mean, it's like, I understand from a cybersecurity perspective, the need to sort of get rid of, you know, old unsupported software and sort of keep pace with where the industry is, you know, especially with regard to, as I was saying, you know, security compliance standards. Obviously, that's very important. We want to make sure that we have a good, a consistent finger on the pulse of that. But I don't know about force integrating Bing necessarily in its current state. I don't know. We'll have to see in the long run how that sort of functions. But anyway, I guess if something else happens, I guess we'll see more information on that right here on Weird News on Sunday nights, now that the season is in full effect again. And those of you who have some other information on this relevant to this or any of our other topics, feel free to hit us up on our Linktree page, which is scrolling at the bottom of the screen, linktr.ee/weekendshowcase, and visit the contact form and send us a note. You know, send us your resources, like what other news articles, weird news articles that you think we should be covering. Just remember, we need to stay away from politics and religion as best as we can. Thanks very much. Let's go ahead and move on. We have four topics left before the end of the show. Let's go ahead and see what we've got here. This is from the Press. New Zealand police find 3.5 tons of cocaine in the Pacific Ocean. Holy crap. Wow. 3.5 tons? Wow. Okay. So New Zealand police said Wednesday they found more than 3 tons of cocaine floating in a remote part of the Pacific Ocean after it was dropped there by an international drug smuggling syndicate. Wow. While they had yet to make any arrests, police said they had dealt a financial blow to everyone from the South American producers of drugs through to the distributors in what was the nation's largest ever drug seizure. New Zealand Police Commissioner Andrew Koster said the cocaine had been dropped at a floating transit point in 81 bales before it was intercepted by a Navy ship, which was deployed to the area last week. The ship then made the 6-day trip back to New Zealand, where the drugs were being documented and destroyed. Yeah, so I don't know how, if I don't think this is an effective way to promote the new season of Snowfall. I really don't think this is remotely relevant or productive, especially considering that show takes place in the 80s. I mean, I know they have a final season coming up, but this is very real. All jokes aside, this is very real. Wow. The wholesale value of the 3.5 tons of cocaine was about 500 million New Zealand dollars, which is 316 million US, and it was likely destined for Australia. Wow. Police, customs, and the military found the drugs after launching Operation Hydros in December in collaboration with international partner agencies to identify and monitor the movements of suspicious vessels. Well, okay, I guess that's New Zealand tax dollars at work right there, keeping that stuff out of the hands of, you know, people. I guess, yeah, good for New Zealand, good for New Zealand law enforcement. That's basically all I can say to that. But yeah, what do y'all think about this? Feel free to drop us a comment in the live chat, or if you're not tuning in with us live, that's fine. Hit us up in the comments feed with your reactions to this and let us know what you think. Let's see, here's Jennifer NVA. I wonder what effect did it have on the marine life? That's a very important question. Thanks for that. Thanks for that feedback, Jennifer NVA. I'm not a marine biologist, obviously. It's been a while since I last sat through a complete episode of SpongeBob. It stands to reason that, I mean, if it can have such dangerous and insane effects on bears, it only stands to reason that there'd be some crazy stuff happening with, you know, whales, sharks, stuff like that. I'm not sure what all species might be indigenous to the waters in between New Zealand and Australia, which is where this particular news piece takes place. But that's a very concerning thought, actually, to bring up. I hadn't thought of that, honestly. Doubly good that they managed to pick that up. Hopefully not too much of that was able to seep out into the ocean waters. This is another thing to have to keep an ear out for in terms of international environmental news. Like, we don't have enough national environmental news, which I'm sure we're all aware of the ongoing train situation, which is its own situation entirely, which I guess better news reporters than I were probably able to are better able to comment on that. Let's see. I thought we had another comment there from Brain Spaz. So might we get buzzed if we eat those fish? I don't know what the effects of that would be necessarily. It would all depend on where you get your seafood from. Goodness, these are valid questions that are probably better suited to outright Googling this sort of thing, basically, which we don't really have very much time. Well, we do have a little bit of time for, come to think of it. What do y'all think? Drop a Y in the chat if I should do some quick Googling on that particular topic, or should we move on? Do you have anybody able to drop a Y in the chat to Google that? Nope? Okay. All right. Going once, going twice. All right. That's fine. Well, anyway, those of you who want to go ahead and look up more information on that, you can go ahead and hit up this particular topic here. New Zealand police, 3.5 tons of the Pacific Ocean. This and all of our other subjects are listed in the sources part of the description at the bottom of this video. Just a reminder, that's on our YouTube and Facebook versions of this particular episode. So if you want to go ahead and get more information on that, there's your starting point, our resources on this particular story. Let's move on. Next topic comes to us from Sky News. We have this and one more from Sky and then another from AP. Here's the first Sky. Woman declared dead at New York care center, found breathing at funeral home. The incident comes just...
Oh, my God!
Thank you, Control. The incident comes just a few weeks after a resident at an Iowa care home was pronounced dead and put in a body bag before being found to be alive at the Ankeny Funeral Home and Crematory. Wow. Let's see. An investigation has been launched after an 82-year-old woman was pronounced dead, only to be found breathing 3 hours later. Let's see. Suffolk County Police said the woman, whose name has not been released, was taken to the O.B. Davis Funeral Homes in Miller Place at 1:30 p.m. She was discovered breathing at 2:09 p.m. She was taken to a hospital. No update on her condition was available on Monday, last week, I guess this is. The state attorney general and health department are investigating, It comes weeks after a care home in Iowa was fined $10,000 over a similar episode. Wow. Wow. I'm not sure what's weirder, the fact that this happened or the fact that this isn't the first time this sort of thing has happened. I mean, goodness, thank goodness they found this poor person. My best reaction to that off the top of my head. Good grief. So, oh wait, well, this is a little bit more than, yeah, it's a little bit more than 7 days old, but still, whenever this happens, good grief. Yeah, thank goodness they found her before, like, serious stuff wound up happening, or, like, you know, before she wound up really passing away. Hopefully she's doing well. I don't see any further information on this right now, but let's go ahead and move on after wishing her well. Let's go ahead and move on. Associated Press. This is from the UK. Thief admits stealing thousands of chocolate Easter eggs. A man who prosecutors said broke into a UK industrial park to steal almost 200,000 chocolate Easter eggs has pleaded guilty to theft and criminal damage. Prosecutors said Tuesday that Joby Poole, age 32, used a metal grinder to break through a gate at an industrial park in Telford, central England on Saturday, then used a stolen semi-truck to tow away a trailer loaded with Cadbury cream eggs and other chocolate goods worth more than £31,000, or $38,000 American. West Mercia police tweeted Monday that shortly after the break-in, officers stopped a vehicle, quote, presumably purporting to be the Easter Bunny, end quote, on a highway and arrested a man on suspicion of theft. Wait a minute. So the vehicle was pretending to be the Easter Bunny? What? See, now my mind is thinking, is this like the car that the big gigantic van that Jeff Daniels and Jim Carrey were using in the Dumb and Dumber movies? That big van that was designed to be like a giant floppy-eared dog? Do y'all remember the movie Dumb and Dumber? Like, that's basically where my brain is going here with this when I see this. Like, how do you make a vehicle into a gigantic Easter Bunny outside of the context of, like, being a parade float or something? You know, I know, unless that's basically what was done here, and I just stumbled onto the whole method and purpose right there. Let's see. Suspect had planned the theft and that he had previous convictions for handling stolen goods. Let's see. What's the person's name? Joby Poole. There we go. Poole entered guilty pleas to theft of a trailer, theft of its contents, and criminal damage to a chain lock. He is expected to be sentenced next month. Okay, well, I guess mystery solved just in time for, well before Easter, I guess. It's a little bit early for this kind of a heist, but I guess there you go. I guess the Cadbury Bunny can sleep well knowing that apparently British police are always on the case, ever vigilant. Stiff upper lip and whatnot, I suppose. Cool. So let's go ahead and move on. We've got, hang on. Brain Spaz says, I like chocolate, but that, I like chocolate, but that heist was ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, I gotta agree with you there. That was a bit much. It was, dare I say, rich. Ha ha ha. Anyway, that's a little bit early for dad jokes, I know, but it's a thing I just wanted to say there. Anyway, let's move on. We have last topic here for tonight. I think we're going to go ahead and do a short show tonight, actually. This is again from Sky News. Factory fined after staff hurt in chocolate accident. Oh, no. The employees fell into the vat of sweet goodness while doing maintenance work, and emergency personnel had to cut a hole in the bottom of the tank to free them. Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, presumably they got out okay. I mean, goodness, this is... My brain is flashing back to Jamie Foxx in Amazing Spider-Man 2, the last time I saw something like this happening, and that did not go well for him. A factory which makes M&Ms and Mars bars has been fined more than $14,500 after an accident in which two workers fell into a vat of chocolate. Wow. It looks like Charlie picked a bad day to visit the factory. Jeez. The U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration cited Mars Wrigley in the June 2022 accident at the Pennsylvania M&M Mars factory, saying the workers were not authorized to work in the tanks and were not trained on the proper safety procedures for the equipment. Yeah, well, that'll do it. Officials said the two workers, who were employed by an outside contracting firm, fell into the partially filled chocolate tank while doing maintenance work at the site in Elizabethtown. Emergency responders were able to free the pair by cutting a hole in the bottom of the tank, officials said. Both were taken to hospital, one by helicopter. A company representative told reporters last week that the safety of workers and outside contractors, quote, is a top priority for our business, end quote. Yeah, that strikes me as a little bit, you know, just damage control, public relations, damage control, pretty cut and dry there. I'm trying to figure out, like, how in the world do you get contractors in a company like this that's like doing that kind of work without making sure that they're perfectly trained and properly trained for that sort of thing? I don't know. This sounds like the sort of thing that there must have been something else in play. Like, they had to have been, presumably they would have to have been like properly trained, but maybe just somebody fell asleep at the wheel metaphorically and somebody else happened to be nearby and got caught up in it, or like wound up sort of like falling as well in the course of saving the first person, maybe. I don't know. There's a couple different ways that this sort of situation can be interpreted based on this particular description. All we know is they fell into a partially filled chocolate tank, which, I mean, that strikes me as the sort of thing that would happen on Double Dare every single day back in the 90s. But this could very easily have been a far more dangerous sort of result than winning a trip to space camp. I don't know. But anyway, let's see. And it's doing more information about the company Mars Wrigley and all that sort of thing. OSHA's collaborative approach to working, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. Yeah, so that's unfortunate that this happened, but they seem to have gotten through it okay. The workers seem to have gotten through it okay, so that's good. But yeah, ouch. Well, I guess let's just make sure that people are properly trained and proper safety procedures are put in place then, I guess, moving forward. Costly lesson to learn, but I don't know what else to really sort of extrapolate from this. I guess there you go. So that's the last topic, I guess, that we have for this week. What were your favorite topics for this week? Those of you at home watching along with us right now, I think my favorite topic for the week, let's see, I'm trying to think right now. We had a lot of different ones here, basically. The enzyme to food, Bing being emotional, New Zealand police found cocaine in the sea in open water. Let's see. Probably, what am I going to go ahead and say here? I want to be lazy and just say the emu. But you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and actually say, I'm going to say the enzyme. I know earlier I said I didn't like this particular story, but it's like, I understand this is kind of where we're at right now in terms of scientific breakthroughs. You know, it's good that we're actually putting effort in to like find outside the box solutions for, you know, different world problems. And it's not too hard to see that the possibilities with research in this sort of field, being able to solve hunger crises and all sorts of other issues basically around the world. So I'm really curious to see what winds up happening as a result of it, directly or indirectly as a result of this particular research, even though it's not specifically relevant to us as humans, whatever. Brain Spaz says the emu was cool. Yeah, the emu was interesting. It was a funny little sort of opening bit for this episode tonight. What was the, it starts with an M. I'm trying to remember the name of the Mallory. There you go. Was the name of the emu that is apparently rushing late for work at Liberty Mutual Insurance, apparently. But there you go, I suppose. Either that or like getting back into Jumanji, I guess. I don't know, not to restate my earlier punchlines there, but hey, it works. What can I say? What were your favorite headlines that we were discussing tonight over the course of Weird News? Drop us a comment in the comment feed down below at the bottom of this video on any of our platforms. I think this video is still going to remain up on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, all at Weekend Showcase. And yeah, let us know what you think. Might be able to actually like create some little like clips featuring your comments and maybe feedback on it and, you know, put out some of the little standalone content on that later on possibly, but it can't happen if you don't comment. So make sure you do that. We have one more thing I almost forgot. This is a full show. And that means now that the season has gone back into full effect, we can do something that we've been sorely lacking in recent, sorely lacking in recent weeks, which is the dad joke of the day. So now it's time to bust out the tablet and see what we can do for a dad joke of the day. So, all right, how about this? When I was a kid, my mother told me I could be anyone I wanted to be. Turns out identity theft is a crime. Rimshot. So that's it for dad joke of the day. And that's also it for this particular episode of Weekend Showcase. We were covering weird news for the week ending Sunday, February 19th, 2023. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Don. Don't forget to check us out on any social media platform. Basically, we're everywhere at Weekend Showcase, including TikTok. Make sure you're following us there. And make sure you hit that like button right here and subscribe. Make sure you have your notification buttons on so you're getting all the interesting little announcements and posts that we're going to be putting out over the course of the coming months. We just started with 2023. We have a lot of awesome content and plans right around the corner. Can't wait to get started and show y'all what we've got cooking. But for now, thanks so much for watching. Everybody enjoy your evening and the remainder of your weekend. And we'll see you once again this coming Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific for more Weekend Showcase. Thanks for watching. Good night.